Blog Talk Radio.
Investigations, but we do not currently have an investigation in that particular area. All right. What about the $1 trillion plus in expansion of the Federal Reserve's balance sheet since last September? Have you conducted any investigations regarding that?
We call it a review, and the term investigation may have different connotations. So we're actually conducting a fairly high-level review of the various lending facilities collectively, which would include, the TALF, a variety of the different programs.
This is interesting. This woman, there's been over almost 2 million views on this since it was put up back in 2012 in May, which would be, 4 years ago today, this month. And, this is nothing but obfuscation and everything else, and they still never get down to the answer of where the hell the money went to, all right? This is they're talking to the chief auditor or whatever of the Federal Reserve. Now, what was interesting was, okay, where is it? Where did I just see this? There was a follow-up one that I wanted to do. That's okay. But the amazing thing about it is where the hell did the money go? You know, where's the money? And I think that's what we gotta ask. Who was it? I think Bernie Sanders here it is. Where is the money? Sanders asked Bernanke. This was back in 2009. All right. When all this trillions of dollars
are gone. We have spent a lot of time in Congress talking about the $700 billion TARP bailout, which I voted against, as it happens. Not a whole lot has been talked about with regard to the $2.2 trillion that the Fed has lent out. Now, I find it absolutely extraordinary that I wrote you a letter and I said, hey, who'd you lend the money to? What were the terms of those loans? How can my constituents in Vermont get some of that money? Who makes the decisions? Do you guys sit around in a room? Do you make it? Are there conflicts of interest? So my question to you is, will you tell the American people to whom you lent $2.2 trillion of their dollars? Will you tell us who got that money and what the terms are of those agreements?
We explain each of our programs. In terms of the terms, we explain the terms exactly. We explain what the collateral requirements are. We explain what
to whom did you explain that?
It's on our website.
Yeah. Okay.
So all that information is available in our commercial paper program.
And who got the money?
Hundreds and hundreds of banks. Any bank or that has access to the U.S. Federal Reserve's discount.
Tell us who they are.
No, because the reason that is counterproductive and will destroy the value of the program is that banks will not come to the
decision. Isn't that too bad?
Sorry?
In other words, isn't that too bad? They took the money, but they don't want to be public about the fact that they received it. We heard a whole lot about AIG. They're on the front pages.
These are very
now, I got banks, and I have businesses in the state of Vermont who are in a lot of trouble. Not banks. Our banks, by the way, are doing pretty well. Now, how do these guys who are honest business people get it? Do you have to be a large, greedy, reckless financial institution to apply for these monies?
There is no subsidy. There is no capital involved. There is no gift involved. It is a collateralized short-term liquid loan that is both over-collateralized and is recourse to the company itself. We have never lost a penny doing it.
And how can other institutions get those loans as well?
According to the law, we are supposed to be lending to depository institutions.
Let me just say this, Mr. Chairman. I have a hard time understanding how you have put $2.2 trillion at risk without making those names available, those institutions public. And we're going to introduce legislation today, by the way, to demand that you do that. It is unacceptable to me that that goes on.
Oh, that was Mr. Sanders, Bernie. And that guy was right on, you know. Is right on in so many things. Not everything, but he tries. I guess what I'm getting at is nobody knows where the hell this money went to. And it lost nine. And the Senate has been trying to find out. Bernie is trying to find out. Yet, you know. tell you. I'm still working here. Hang on a second, folks. I wrote about this on my website yesterday, I believe it was, the day before, when it happened, and I was really quite upset by, well, upset in a sense, I'm upset, but, you know, in the sense that I was really surprised that, God almighty, why do I have this horrible, what a horrible website this is. The Daily Kos wrote an article condemning Bernie Sanders and calling him unfit to be the president of the United States because, you know, they say he condoned violence at the Democratic convention in Nevada. Well, Bernie denounced it outright, but he said, but, you know, he said that these bastards are unfair. These guys are not right. You know, it's a rigged system. And so the Daily Kos, who's its publisher is a CIA operative and well known to most, that, you know, the Daily Kos is a liberal, progressive, I love that word, it makes me laugh, a website, you know, very, very, very popular amongst the liberals of the world, of the United States anyway, who, you know, were democratic liberals, you know, the bullshit. So, you know, this is what he's saying. You know, the Daily Kos has always been a trolling website. I don't write on it. I don't even read it because of it, because it's just a crock of crap, you know, most of it. Or it's out there, it's propagandized, it's, you know what I mean? That's what it is. And so it's, and it always bothers me. It's like mainstream media. The problem isn't Bernie Sanders supporters, it's Bernie Sanders himself, they say. Yeah, well, Daily Kos, what a bunch of a-holes. And did Sanders supporters throw chairs at the Nevada convention? No, they didn't. They did not. I got videos on that posted on my website, which you can see at lasteelshow.org. And they're all over, it's all over the YouTube, too. This was really an interesting one. Justice Department lawyers got a slap they deserved. In a stinging slap at the Justice Department, a federal judge last week ordered practically all the lawyers in its main D.C. office to take ethics training for 5 years. At that, they got off light. Yeah. This is kind of an interesting thing. This is from the New York Post, too. They got off light with 5 years of training, ethics training. At that, they got off light with Judge Andrew Hannon said they would have disbarred the lawyers who had deceived him if he had the power. Hannon was the judge who heard the request by 26 states to toss out President Obama's 2014 executive order granting temporary legal status to millions of immigrants who aren't actually legal. The case is now before the Supreme Court, which is the only reason Hannon didn't issue a summary judgment against Obama and the lawyers who lied. Federal rules of civil procedure require attorneys to neither mislead the courts or allow the courts to be misled, and Hannon found that the justice lawyers had done just that in his court. How so? The states were considering filing for an immediate injunction to stop justice from implementing the Obama order. And the lawyers assured Hannon in court that nothing would go ahead before February 15, 2015. So there was no need. Then the department went ahead and legalized it. Yeah, I mean, they legalized it. And yeah, so anyway, they found that all the justice lawyers had done just that. They misled the courts. And so the states were considering filing for an immediate injunction to stop justice from implementing the Obama order. And the lawyers assured Hannon in court that nothing would go ahead before February 2015, and so there was no need. Then the department went ahead and legalized 100,000 illegals without ever telling the judge. Hence his fury once he learned the truth. And Hannon not only barred the offending attorneys from ever appearing in his court again, he ordered ethics training for all lawyers from Maine Justice, the D.C. Central Office, who might appear in courts in any of the 26 states. He has also ordered Attorney General Loretta Lynch to present within 60 days her plan to making sure justice lawyers never play such games again. We don't blame Lynch. This all went on under her predecessor, Eric Holder, but we hope she embraces Hannon's order rather than trying to appeal. And all lawyers have an obligation to act honestly in all of their dealings with the court, as Hannon put it. Attorneys at the Justice Department have a clear duty to be candid with the courts. Lynch might want to see if she can get her guilty subordinates disbarred. Whoa. That's pretty serious business, folks. Yeah. They're lying to the judge. You don't care if you're Obama himself. You can't lie to a judge. I thought this was really, really interesting. I don't know if, you know, if how accurate it is, but I guess it is. This from the this happened at the beginning of the end of last month. This article is dated April 28th, but it says Justice Department files massive action against Hillary. Yeah. It says a bombshell new filing by the Justice Department includes a key phrase that many are saying hints at a criminal prosecution being planned for Hillary Clinton. Yeah. And folks, I don't know about you, but yeah, I don't think I'd be voting for her. Last week, Vice News reporter Jason Leopold, this is from what is this? WDO. I don't know exactly what it is, but WDO. World Daily. Okay, World Daily Online. Classification of an FBI declaration that gave details about how sensitive information got on Hillary's server. According to Political Insider, the Justice Department submitted the declaration as a secret filing. This backfired when a U.S. District Court judge demanded, publicly submitted a redacted copy of the document, or show just cause why. That is impossible. So anyway, looks like she's going to be that. She has been. It's coming to an indictment, folks. It really, really is. They haven't quite said the word yet, but it really, really is. Now, for all of you people who are hoping to legalize marijuana one day, possibly by November, and by number, I think, 6 or 7 states are planning to legalize, trying to legalize marijuana. But it says this is from The Intercept. Official sources say police and prison guard groups fight marijuana legalization in California. Yeah, California is one of the states right now in the 2016 election that's planning to referendum to legalize pot. It's like they did in Oregon and Washington State. I think it was Oregon and Colorado. You know, Massachusetts is supposed to have one as well, a referendum for that, and it looks like it's going to go through. But anyway, let me just briefly say this. I want to read an introduction to our guest and get a hold of him on the line. Roughly half of the money raised to oppose a ballot measure to legalize recreational marijuana in California is coming from police and prison guard groups, terrified that they might lose the revenue streams to which they have become so deeply addicted. Drug war money has become a notable source of funding for law enforcement interests. Huge government grants and asset seizure windfalls benefit police departments, while the constant supply of prisoners keeps the prison business booming. In opposition to the marijuana legalization initiative, slated to go before voters in November, has been organized by John Lovell, a longtime Sacramento lobbyist for police chiefs and prison guard supervisors. Lovell's Coalition for Responsible Drug Policies, a committee created to defeat the pot initiative, raised $60,000 during the first 3 months of the year, according to the disclosure filed earlier this month. The funds came from a group representing law enforcement, including the California Police Chiefs Association, Riverside Sheriff's Association, Los Angeles Police Protective League's Issues PAC, and the California Correctional Supervisors Organization. Other donors included the California Teamsters Union, I'm surprised at that, and the California Hospital Association, as well as SAM Action, an anti-marijuana advocacy group, co-founded by former Representative Patrick Kennedy, Democrat from Rhode Island, and a former G.W. Bush speechwriter, David Frum. This article goes on, but, you know, it's a lot of bullshit. You know, basically, that, you know, just more bullshit from bullshit. That, you know, the liquor companies, I suppose the liquor companies aren't, they're also huge donators to the anti-marijuana legalization fund movement. And that's all I can tell you. If you want to finish that article, you can go to theintercept.com. Eight charged with illegally selling pot by delivery in Seattle. That's pretty cool. Americans turned to dangerous synthetic marijuana to evade drug tests. Oh, for God's sakes. Just legalize the damn stuff. Legalize it. And on that note, I'm going to end with Ron, what's his name? Ron, what was his name? The anchorman there, played by Will Ferrell. I forgot his name. Anyway, there's a picture of him there, and it says, being an activist is like trying to tell 7-year-old boys that pro wrestling is fake. And that's true. You know, it's like you just, no one's going to believe you. If they do, it's like, you know. Antibiotic use in food fuels humans' resistance to vital drugs. Yeah. The more antibiotics in meat products and so on, the more resistant we become to vital drugs. Pharmaceutical giant caught supplying cartels with tons of bulk ingredients to produce meth. Yeah, can you imagine this, folks? It just totally blew my mind. Yeah, this is from freethoughtproject.com. Pharmaceutical giants are caught supplying cartels with tons of bulk ingredients to produce meth. Yeah. It's prosecutors in Belgium have recently announced that executives with pharmaceutical companies based in the country will be charged with knowingly providing drug cartels with prescription drugs that were used to manufacture methamphetamine. The companies, I mean, the greed of these companies, man, the greed of them is so amazing. You know, that they got to sell everything illegally, you know. It's just freaking unbelievable. Bernie's the only one who's talking about chopping these guys down to size, and I support him for that. I really do. But before we move on, I want to go to my guest's resume and talk a little bit about him and about his website. His website is Smart Aleck, okay, smartaleck.com. And you can see them on the page. I'm sorry. You can see them on Facebook. And hang on, folks. I got to get back up here to the introduction, where I call them. Be right with you there, folks. There are a few disadvantages working with depending on the internet, you know. It really is. Okay. Before I bring my guest on tonight, Matthew Cardinale, I want to just read this a little introduction to him and his movement. It says, "The Rebirth of a Nation's Democracy. After years of exposing the controversial American Legislative Exchange Council, which is ALEC, the nation's largest secretive corporate spin machine and right-wing policy incubator, Matthew Charles Cardinale, all right, the editor of Atlanta's Progressive News, became so fed up he decided to form a progressive, grassroots, transparent alternative, Smart Aleck. And since Smart Aleck, since 1973, Aleck's elite task force of right-wing lawmakers and corporate lobbyists have existed to carefully craft model bills to expose a one-size-fits-all agenda on the states. Their long-term goals are downsizing government and removing regulations of corporations. So we all know what they're doing. They're trying to strip the country and favor only Republican wealthy interests. And Smart Aleck is doing just the opposite. They want to. They're not only fighting that, but they're also trying to present legislation on affordable housing in different areas throughout the country. And it has extended its tentacles to the House, and everything from education to housing to health policies right now, Aleck, the right-wing group. But Smart Aleck is trying to offset that. And we're going to talk about that in just a few minutes as I get to with the founder and president, Matthew Cardinale. Smart Aleck's policy focus is on affordable housing and environmental policy, and particularly on empowering low-income, homeless, and marginalized people to make a meaningful difference in shaping and advocating for policy solutions. Affordable housing impact statements were adopted by the city of Atlanta in November 2015 and are currently under consideration in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, New Orleans, Louisiana, Albany, New York. And this is what's happening now with Smart Aleck, and we'll talk more about that shortly. But let's go to our guests and right. So I'm going to call him and excuse me, I'm very bad at multitasking. talking while I'm trying to concentrate on something here. But let's dial him up here and see what's going on. It's a silent dial, I guess. It's a connection. I'm sorry, folks. But Matthew Cardinal, president of Smart Aleck.
Hello?
Yeah, hello, Matthew. This is Leo. How are you? The LA Steel Show.
I'm doing good. How are you? I'm doing good. How are you?
Good, good, good. Yeah, well, welcome to the show, and maybe you could introduce, I did already, I've spoken about you and read about your Smart Aleck, but why don't you kind of give me a few minutes here of introduction to your organization and where you're headed, you know, with it, and how people can help you, you know, in this.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on the program. And actually, Smart Aleck is a new nonprofit organization that I co-founded that is offering a progressive public policy agenda. And, you know, as some of our more savvy listeners will probably pick up on, it is a response to ALEC, which is the American Legislative Exchange Council, and I know that you've kind of talked about them before, and they are really a corporate-funded, Koch Brothers-funded right-wing lobbying organization that pushes a corporate public policy agenda and also just kind of a right-wing social issue, but also undermining democracy, things like that. And so things like even voter ID, and, you know, well, so what was the push to, you know, have voter ID laws in all these states, and all of a sudden there was this phantom of voter fraud, and things like, you know, all of a sudden all these states want to limit food stamps and drug tests for food stamps. All these things come, they're written by ALEC, and then they're replicated to the states and state legislatures. And basically, you know, that's okay. That's part of the democratic process. There's some other issues with how they operate. But we decided that we would offer a progressive public policy alternative that will actually focus on affordable housing and the environment, and will also kind of offer a different way of doing public policy that will be transparent and that will also be participatory. And we want to include low-income people. We want to include people of color. I mean, we already have done that on our board, and that's in our bylaws. Transparency is in our bylaws. Our minutes are going to be on the internet. We're not going to be doing backroom lobbying. We're going to be doing transparent lobbying, which, you know, which is just it's a little bit of a different way of doing things. But basically, it grew out of some work that I've been doing for quite some time. So my name is Matthew Charles Cardinale, as you know. I run the Atlanta Progressive News, which is how I first became familiar with ALEC and affordable housing issues in Atlanta. That's an online news service, atlantaprogressivenews.com. And I actually drafted a model ordinance called Affordable Housing Impact Statements that is a way for cities and counties to keep track of the impact of public policy decisions on the housing stock in that jurisdiction. And it was actually passed in the city of Atlanta, and it is now pending in several cities. It's pending in Pittsburgh and Albany and New Orleans, and so it just kind of took off. And I kind of said to myself, well, this is kind of like the work of ALEC. This is like a progressive ALEC, and wouldn't it be funny if we called it Smart ALEC? And so, you know, that was kind of like, oh, yeah, wouldn't that be funny? And then I thought about it some more. I'm like, that's actually a really good idea. Well, what would Smart ALEC stand for? And until I kind of came up with that, you know, and that was State and Municipal Action, for results today. And then the second part is actually agenda for legislative empowerment and collaboration. So, therefore, it seems pretty cool. I'll actually tell you a little story, too, that kind of made it seem like, oh, wow, this was meant to be. I wanted smartaleck.org to be our URL, and it was already taken by someone who lived in Portland. I live in Portland, and but he wasn't doing anything with it. So I called the guy up, and his name's Christian Seppa, and he actually had the same exact idea and had reserved the URL for that purpose and then had never gotten around to it. So I said, well, why don't you just join us? So he's on our board now, and it's actually www.smartaleck.org. And we are in operation.
Well, that's great. I'm amazed. What is your background, though? You may explain people to you what I know you have a lot. Are you a certified lawyer, or are you were you a legal intern, or what was your
So that's actually an interesting question. So basically, I am a third-year law student at Gonzaga University, and so that model ordinance was actually written kind of like as part of a can you hold on just 1 second?
Sure.
I'm so sorry.
Okay. We're talking with Matthew Cardinale. He's the founder of SmartAleck.org, which is
Sorry. Okay, I'm back. Okay.
And we were discussing your origins there, but I was thinking of I was wondering your background. How did you develop enough information? You know, because it's very difficult to create bills. You know, especially
right.
on such a specific subject or topic as affordable housing and things like this. How many years or what background have you all had? And it appears that you've been, and when you founded this a while back, and you're already into a number of, you've had success in a number of cities, I guess, right?
Yes. So actually the model ordinance came before the organization. The organization was founded to kind of support the work of getting the ordinance enacted. But yes, I mean, it's been several years in the making. When I lived in Atlanta, which is before I went off to law school, I actually I used to be very involved in affordable housing advocacy and going down to the city council meetings, the community development meetings,
yeah.
And we noticed some ongoing issues. One of the ongoing issues was the use of federal dollars to subsidize so-called affordable housing units that weren't really affordable. And so people who are familiar with this know that there's different ways to define affordable, and it's based on the area median income. So you can have 30% of the area median income, 50%, 80%, and that all means different income levels. 30% means you're making about $15,000 a year. You know, 80% is closer to $35,000 a year. And, you know, in a lot of major U.S. cities where the median's around $45,000. So depending on how they define affordable is how this money is getting used and who's getting served. And in every jurisdiction, the bottom line is that you have a population and you have a housing stock. And there's a mismatch between the population and the housing stock because the population has incomes and they have what they can afford. And if there's a mismatch between what they can afford and what is available, that is the unmet need of the jurisdiction. So
curious.
What we can do...
The reason I ask is what made you decide to... focus on affordable housing as opposed to anything else you could have written a legislation for.
Well,
essentially motivation were you that inspired that area of legislation?
Well, I mean, I have a lot of personal, personal biographical reasons for having interest in that.
You don't have to publicly say that, but I was very curious because I back in the 80s when during the real estate. I was a real estate broker for 20 years and a finance broker. And from, I believe, in, let's say, 1980 to, let's see, almost 2000. And it was unusual because my concentration was on affordable housing. I found it was on investment, it was on multiple, you know, units, and affordable housing, but also on income property, you know. And I was the chairman of the board of affordable housing for the Connecticut Real Estate Board and Connecticut Realtors, and it was kind of an odd during the 80s, if you remember. You wouldn't remember. You were too young to be in business at that time, but. During the housing boom, the real estate boom at that time, there was no affordable housing anymore. You know what I mean? It was all gone because housing became so. You had such an increase in pricing, especially in places like Connecticut, California, and so on, that affordable housing was just. I mean, Reagan, during the Reagan years, homelessness went up over 3 million homeless people under the Reagan administration. I mean, like never before. You know, the trickle down economy that he was supposed to have. Yeah, well, you know, it pissed on everybody, except the rich guys. Well, very wealthy, and that destroyed the real estate industry, and brought us into a massive recession through the 90s, through the early 90s and late 80s, but. The affordable housing has been a neglected.
Yes, and in addition, yes, and in addition to that, we've also seen an attack on public housing, and kind of a public relations attack on public housing, as if it's, you know, intrinsically has to be of bad conditions and unsafe and all of that, and as opposed to that being a result of budget decisions. But you know, and when they go in and tear those down and they go to vouchers instead, we are losing units in our affordable housing stock. That's something else why we need to keep track of the impact of our public policy decisions. Go ahead.
The other thing I found with so much of affordable housing is the number of real, truly true crooks that were in that business of these crooked landlords and these crooked investment houses and stuff that were just buying up property and not repairing them and totally on speculation, and so many people got taken during the 80s, but affordable housing became a very, very scarce commodity. And it still is. It really still is.
And that's part of it. It's kind of been a movement away from the mom and pop, property owner, to this, you know, big money, big investment corporations that are coming in. And the other thing that I was going to say is there's been an underfunding in federal programs like the Community Development Block Grant and Home, The Republicans in Congress have been cutting that funding, and as a result, there's been less money making its way down to the cities. And that's why, you know, when there's less and less money, we have to be very, very careful about how we spend it. And I'm tired of them spending it on these so-called affordable units that are helping people who don't really need the help because they're making $35,000. And we're using taxpayer money to do it. And we're not making any headway in our greatest unmet need, which is the families making like $16,000 and less per year. So, anyway,
people are really, really ignored. And, I mean, they're very ignored. One of my biggest ambitions at one time, it still is, I'd love to produce and direct this documentary I've always had this in mind, which was a documentary on the poverty in Connecticut. You know, that's where we are. And, I mean, the disparity in wealth in Connecticut is probably as, I don't think there is, maybe California has that great a disparity. You have the Gulf Coast, and then you have the, you have the coast, and then you have the inner cities, and two of the inner cities in cities in Connecticut are the poorest cities in the country, Hartford and New Haven, and Bridgeport and Waterbury as well. All of our major cities are broke. You know what I mean? They're almost broke.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
And we got a $1 billion deficit this year that the governor's cut. $1 billion out of the budget, and just devastated all of the social services, all of the housing assistance. The Department of Civil of DSS and DSF children, families, and all that. Even the judicial department, they've cut over 300 jobs just in the state judicial department. It's unbelievable.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. It's just unbelievable what they're doing. So the millions and millions of people that need this housing. I mean, have you spoken about or any, like for instance, you're in Oregon, correct? But I guess California has some of the highest homeless rates in the world, in the country rather, and Hawaii has the highest rate of homeless people in the country. They have tent cities all over the place. How do cities and states just neglect these people? Have you found that the indifference, they're just indifferent to it, or is it a deliberate neglect, you know, of an inner city for people?
It depends. It depends on the jurisdiction, but the problem has just run away from us, and the real estate market has run away from us, and we kind of turned around and said, oh dear, we have, maybe in the past we had a smaller shortage of affordable housing. Now we have a huge shortage. We have market rate housing that in some cases is not even filled because they'd rather let it sit empty than bring the price down. And then we have homeless people, like you said. So there's a real mismatch between our housing stock. And so the affordable housing impact statement is to really refocus our attention on our housing stock, because homelessness is not a caused by addiction alone or mental issues alone. That's a small portion of it.
Homelessness is caused by having no job and no access to work and no access to money.
And then the cost of housing.
So, a lot of that reason, it's just I've known people that were homeless that by no means. I mean, by their houses were burned. Things like that, storms and whatnot, all kinds of reasons to be homeless, but they're
so
they're out there, and there's very few shelters, and there's definitely not enough shelters to handle the bludgeoning or burgeoning numbers of homeless people that are growing around the country.
If any of your listeners are interested in, becoming part of Smart Aleck, following us on Facebook, and the like, I would encourage them to go to smartaleck.org. I would encourage them to go to our Facebook page, and that's actually facebook.com/state.municipal.action. That's facebook.com/state.municipal.action. And, we are in the process of...
I meant to promote that, too. It's a nice Facebook page. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. We love the logo. The logo's, really, really adorable. And so, if people want to You know, as we're really, we want a national board. We want national representation on our board.
Right.
We're doing work in Albany. If people think that affordable housing impact statements might work in their city, we'd be happy to work with you. And, you know, we want really the public, the citizens, to have input into what our next model ordinance would actually be. So, but I am kind of like, I think I told you I was, had something that I was doing from 4 to 5, and now I'm kind of still in the space, and they need me to kind of vacate.
No,
so I'm still actually where I was from 4 to 5. So I need to kind of move on. But, but it's just been a pleasure to, you know, to talk with you, and let's stay in touch. I want to let you know.
If you'd like, I mean, you can embed this program onto your website. You know, no obligation. You can just go to the main page of Blog Talk Radio, LA Steel Show, ORG, and you can actually, there's a button there that you press, and you can, it says embed, you know, to embed it into your own website, so you have an interview with yourself.
That sounds wonderful. Thank you so much. It was such a
Please,
we will definitely look at that.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
What I believe I'll do as well is I will put a link to your site on my website so that people can many visitors can hopefully see what you're doing. All right.
Great.
And
great.
Thank you so much.
It was such a pleasure. Thank you.
Right.
Okay.
Good night. And that was of course Matthew Cardinal, and his group is called Smart Alec, and you can see his website on smartalec.org. And I hope you go to his site. We've got only about 10 minutes left, and I'm going to I'm going to read something here. What I'm going to do is I want to go to my own website, and I'd like to read an article or two that I put up there. Just give me 1 second here when my site comes up. And okay. There we go. All right, my latest and greatest article is essentially on. I don't know if anybody follows this, follows what's been happening, or even goes to the Daily Cause, which is a webpage, a well-known webpage, gets a million visits a day or something like that, by the liberal world, and but the little few people, I guess, know. I've known this for many, many years, but the few people, I guess, have realized that the Daily Cause, the owner, the publisher of the Daily Cause, is actually a CIA asset and very well known. Worked in the CIA for years, and believed that the CIA actually and the government money actually sponsored this website. The Daily Cause, which was back 10 years ago, there was a lot of anti-war radical movement going on. I was part of it. A lot of people were part of it. And Daily Cause became I always felt was nothing more than a net, that attracted, radical thinkers or not radical thinkers, but liberal anti-war thinkers and commentators and whatnot, to express their opinions. And, who knows where that information went and how many of those millions of contributors over the years have actually been surveillanced and watched and who knows if they might have been arrested. But, you know, the CIA is has been known to do these kind of things and set up these major websites and magazines and so on. And there's an article, a political magazine story, that came out. Bernie Sanders loses his halo. And what happened is that, I'll read a little bit about this, what I wrote today or yesterday. And I post two links. There's another one. There's a website called About Truth About Cause, truth-about-cause, KOS.blogspot. And it's an interesting thing that really goes into depth about investigation into who the actual publisher of the Cause, Daily Cause, is. Now, I'm going to read this, and it says, "I am." This is my own essay. I am certain not all Bernie Sanders supporters are progressive pushovers afraid of a fight with Hillary wonks, but the Hillary-loving publisher of the DailyCause.com thinks Bernie Sanders should make a stronger apology and statement to his supporters for their growing outrage at the Democratic. The growing outrage at the Democratic Party for election fraud and all the bought-off Hillary superdelegates. The Democrat presidential nomination will not be handed over to Hillary without a real fight, not just a shouting and throwing a chair. The Nevada convention will go down in history as the greatest farce in U.S. elections. The Hillary wonks stole the delegate elections by a deliberate miscount and dismissal of over 60 Bernie Sanders delegates, because those 60 legitimate delegates for Bernie would have meant that Bernie beat Hillary as Nevada's Democratic choice for nominee. I lost all respect for Senator Barbara Boxer, for crying at how scared she was when she spoke to the delegates who knew she was another Hillary hag, no different than the convention chairwoman, Roberta Lang, who dissed the Bernie delegates, voter count. Bernie did say he wanted no violence from his supporters, but he also said he would not put up with the Democrat Party election fraud that happened in Nevada and Arizona. It has been known for many years that the Daily Cause is a CIA-backed up publication, just as the National Review magazine is a CIA publication, whose founding publisher was William F. Buckley, Jr., a well-known CIA asset. These right and left-wing publications were established to continue the political right and left division in the American politics and keep track of the most militant and radical members of the left and right. Americans and people throughout the world who make statements on Daily Cause or Facebook or any social media are watched and read by CIA and NSA, also FBI and local police. Social media outlets like Facebook, Google, YouTube, and many others were funded by the U.S. government and these agencies during their initial startups. Governments have never had such ease in gathering information on citizens around the world than they do today. Edward Snowden warned everyone about the overwhelming reach of the intelligence agencies today and how they violate every aspect of Americans' constitutional rights to privacy and free speech. The Daily Cause is a trolling website for liberals whose publisher is a known CIA asset. Why would any progressive in their right mind write anything or believe anything in the Daily Cause? Obama and every established Democrat leader has written for the Daily Cause. Former Clinton campaign strategist Jim Carville stated the reason he chose to be a strategist for the Democrats is because he felt Democrats were all stupid sheep that followed their party leaders without question. He was right until Bernie Sanders got into the party and realized how rigged and corrupt it is, and they now despise the entire Democrat. Bernie supporters got into the party realized how rigged and corrupt it is, and they now despise party leaders without question. Bernie was right. The mighty liberal Daily Cause is a propaganda outlet of the Democratic Party and the U.S. government, scolding Bernie Sanders for not telling his supporters to eat shit from the Democrat Party and all Hillary hags and hacks and the Nevada State Convention and elsewhere. Yes. So that's exactly what's happening, folks, out there. It's no surprise. No surprise. There's a video that I have here, which is interesting, but I won't have time to play it or pass time, but it's a brief article. I do recommend, please, that you go to lasteelshow.org. That's my website, and browse around there, recent articles. But Hillary Democrats rigged the California primary. This is a video from YouTube showing how they sued Democratic Party for sending out fraudulent voter registration forms in California. The Democrats and Hillary are absolutely desperate and have gone all out in California to rig the primary by sending misprinted and false voter registration forms. Watch this. I can't play the video over, but California residents have up to today, or actually yesterday was their last day to register for a vote, but they have also sued the state of California to extend the voting extend voting registration until the end of this week for the voter primary, which is due in the Democratic primary due in June 7th. But that's what they're trying to do, you know. And a lawsuit has been filed against the Democratic Party in California for election fraud over this issue. It says, don't let Hillary and Democrats do this. Don't trust any Democratic hack or governors, senators, congressmen, or registrars. See the list of super Hillary delegates, which I have a list of, which you can tell it's a Wikipedia print of all of the delegates, super delegates that have Clinton, that have voted for Clinton, or already have sealed the, have pledged to go to Clinton. And, but that's what's going on. So anyway, you can't let Democrats do this. See the list of superdelegates. Bernie Sanders is a Democratic candidate because he had no other choice. California liberals, voters, can destroy the establishment Democrats by giving all of their votes to Bernie Sanders. The real revolution can be won in California if Bernie supporters vote and demand their votes be counted. Also, every other Bernie Sanders supporter in every state with an upcoming primary should check their voter registration and verify your party's affiliation is correct to vote in the upcoming primaries and the general election. And I urge everybody in California to check their voting registration status, because they've been purging, the Democrats have been purging the voter registrars. They purged over 120,000 just in Brooklyn alone, during the New York primaries, which was one of the main causes for the loss of Bernie Sanders. So don't trust the Democrats. Don't trust your voting registrars. Check it out yourself. Make sure everything, especially out there in California, your votes are so important now for Bernie. So I want to wish everybody a happy good night, and thank you for joining me. And we'll talk to you next week. And if you join the show, please tell people about it. Thank you, and have a very nice evening. We'll talk to you next week.